Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, March 23rd, 2017. And this says Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everyone. It is 21 degrees, crispy and partly cloudy here in upstate New York. It's very dangerous, actually. All the snow turned into a big block of slippery ice. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Bill Joy, Kurzweil, Ted Kaczynski, and Why the Future Doesn't Need Us. And we spent a good part of the end of the show reading through, actually, it might have been the beginning of the show, reading through the first page of Bill Joy's essay in Wired Magazine back in 2010, titled Why the Future Doesn't Need Us. And he paints a pretty convincing picture. Some of the discussions that he had, his book that he had read, which we find out then, this whole excerpt that he had outlined about this dystopian future, was actually Ted Kaczynski, a.k.a. Unabomber, discussing his view of the future and the reasons why he believed so from a mathematic point of view. And so I have to say it was quite disturbing because he seems to see the future a lot of the ways that we've been seeing it here. He was recommended a documentary called The Net. And I'll have to find it. I don't know. Everything is moving slow, including my brain. Yeah, there was a documentary. I don't know. I don't see it here. It was called The Net. Unabomber. LSD and the Internet. And of course, I read and it raised an eyebrow and said, huh? I watched almost all of it yesterday. I have 20 minutes to finish. And it was excellent. Highly recommended. I looked at a lot of different things. Even the guy who created ARPA and ARPANET was interviewed. And they managed to tie the whole CIA mind control. I guess Kaczynski was a part of that whole thing as well. The LSD experiments out of Berkeley. And it was excellent, very excellent. And a lot of things fall into place after watching that. So thank you very much for suggesting it, kind listener. So what we're going to continue today is I think we're going to read a little bit more of this Bill Joy. And then we are going to take a look at some very strange things like growing body parts on apples and things of that nature. And speaking of growing body parts on apples, that is one of the things that concerned Bill Joy. You know, back in 2000, I think it was 2010. This article is actually from 2000. Back in 2000, we were already aware of genetic modification. I don't think we had any clue at all that they had already been messing around with that stuff since the 80s. But we dug it up. It had been since the 80s that Charles Artston had been tinkering with vaccine bananas and things of that nature. And at the same time, genetically modified foods. Remember, the whole vaccination and edible vaccines, transgenic vaccines, and GMO foods all came from the same laboratory. They were tinkering with all that stuff at the same time. They were afraid, of course, that people would not accept the quote-unquote edible vaccines. So that's something that they're working on over in India now, you know, because they don't need refrigeration like normal vaccines, and they'd be good for third world nations. But, see, they were afraid that people were going to put two and two together and go, wait, genetically modified food that is vaccine, wait a second. And so I think that that is the reason why they moved those edible vaccines offshore. Truther Talk Radio, April and Verstein were the ones who turned me on to that. I'd never heard of edible vaccines. And they had a guest on one time that was talking about them. And we started to dig into some of the research. And I was really horrified by some of the stuff I found because it's the same exact technology. So when we had discovered last year or the year before in Monsanto's timeline they had put out, you know, for like 2015 or 2016, all the things they're going to be working on that year. One of them was showing RNAi and switch flipping and doing all this stuff. And I'm like, wait a second, that's the same stuff that I just saw that they were doing in Plants. That's when it all hit me. This has all been a big game. It's been going on for a very long time, and we haven't known. And now, oh no, the rabbit hole goes way deeper. Because now, as we start digging into somebody such as Ted Kaczynski, amazingly enough, when they started to trace it all back to who the controller is, because that's what they kept talking about was the controller, it ended coming back to cybernetics. Cybernetics, if I'm not mistaken, what I learned from there was between the world wars that they started tinkering with that. And it was all about merging man with machine. This is something that's been going on for many years and been this utopian dream. They'd even pointed out that it was going to be the best way to be able to mind break us with things such as LSD and make us malleable, to break away from our societal norms so they could mold us to want to get rid of nationalism and become a global society. The internet spreading everywhere, high speed, eat all you want data. I think that's what it's all about. This internet has been allowed to invade our lives. It's why they're spending federal dollars to get all rural America online, and why it's a big investment to make these Skybender drones that you could send over Africa, because those poor people are so deprived that they don't have a smartphone. Don't do it, people. If you can get off grid, get off grid. In my research yesterday, I found some, I don't know if it was a news group or, oh, I know what it was. It was on YouTube. It was on a David Icke video. I had never listened to David Icke before until Brandon Turville had him on as a guest. And it was a very interesting interview. But I didn't know what his topics were. All I knew about was lizard people that he talked about. But then I saw, when I looked up some of his stuff after Brandon's interview, he actually was dealing with transhumanism stuff, so I was kind of impressed. I listened to a pretty extensive interview on that, and I was like, wow, this dude actually knows what he's talking about. But yesterday, when I was looking for something else related to this, the future doesn't need us, and Kaczynski, I came across a David Icke video from just a few days ago, as a matter of fact. It was March 18th, 2017, titled, They Are Building a Technological Prison for Humanity, a Dot Connector video cast. I have not gotten a chance to listen to this, so I'm not going to comment on anything. It has been pretty insane in trying to squeeze in a 2-hour documentary with something that I usually don't have the ability to be able to do, but I did it just for this conversation. And but anyway, this David Icke video, I was very surprised. And how does David Icke get 52,000 views before the first cup gets 52? But he is talking about Google being the prime driver of the transhumanist agenda. And remember, we pointed that out for a very long time. And remember, I told you who the unholy trinity was when all that came together: Google, DARPA, Kurzweil. And Kurzweil really is the shuffling mad scientist. Everybody used to laugh at him or be very frightened of him. And now they've put him in charge at Google with unlimited budgets. And they are allowing, he is like the mad scientist who was able to make their 50-year unsuccessful attempts at cybernetics come true. You notice these brain-computer interfaces and all this brain-like computing has hit fast forward. And that was when the man slid into the driver's seat. That's all he had to do. They just needed somebody who totally got it. And he just needed somebody who gave him enough toys and had enough cash to let him do what he does best, and that's invent. And we now have this very frightening coming together of these technologies that there's no escape from. So chat dropped me a video then last night. I don't think the guy ever gives his name, but I ran into him a couple different places now since last night. He was a DARPA insider who was a whistleblower. He was the creator of that technology called Voice of God. That was the technology they used in the Iraq War, where they were able to use microwaves and beam it into your head and make you believe you're hearing voices. Well, we watched, friend and I, actually, you're going to laugh at me, but I used to enjoy Jesse Ventura's, I don't remember what it was called, something conspiracy. I've seen a couple of them. The one with the coffins was a good one. And then yesterday, we found the one on targeted individuals and the Voice of God on Vimeo. So we watched that last night. And the dude that I had seen in the video earlier in the day, who was the DARPA whistleblower, talked about all of these technologies. He was the creator of the Voice of God. That was the tool that they had used to get the Iraqis to set down their guns and all surrender without ever offering or firing a shot, because they made them believe that they saw Allah and Allah told them to put down their guns. Well, you know, the documentary about Kaczynski, when it was talking about mind control and all these other things, it talked about trying to move us into a new world order, and it talked about mind control. And it talked about how at some point in the future, they are going to try to convince us to merge with that machine. I think they are going to make us feel like, and we've talked about this as well, Wernher von Braun and this whole space thing, and Ronald Reagan talking about if we were threatened by a threat from outside of our world, I'm just paraphrasing, we would all pull together in defense. Guys, the whole Project Blue Beam, the whole takeover of space by our federal government, Obama's space edict for collecting space garbage, and we have all these space command now, it's called, it's running right out of the Air Force. We got HARP. ARP is run by an entire conglomerate of Department of Defense agencies, plus the University of Alaska. But I discovered University of Alaska's president is from, she used to work at DARPA. And these guys are doing things with frequencies and ionospheric heating and plasma bombing the sky. To increase radio reception. It's got to make you wonder that Project quote unquote Blue Beam, that no one is allowed to admit that exists, I think they're going to use that sucker. I really think, I don't know, there's lots of scramble in my head right now because I saw a lot of stuff yesterday that I'm still processing. But I'm going to tell you that I don't believe that there is any doubt at all in my mind right now that any of that technology, and even the stuff that I still kind of snickered about, is fantasy at all. I think from everything that I've seen, they have been manipulating the public and targeting the public for many years, experimenting with frequencies and with psychology, and to see how it would influence the general public and what they could make the general public do. So when you see Ted Kaczynski, and like I said, the mainstream painted him as a lunatic, as someone who had gone completely off his rocker, and he was babbling something about satellites and mind control, how many other people who were deemed quote-unquote domestic terrorists were babbling about some of the same things? I am going to say, guys, that's careful, because it could be us one day. It could be me one day. And I'll guarantee you that I would look like a lunatic babbling about this stuff, but anyone who knew me anyone who's followed any of these shows, these conspiracy theory shows, yes, but conspiracy theories that come out of things such as MIT Technology Review, or, you know, Nature Magazine, New York Times, yeah, that conspiracy theory, would know that they just made me look that way to paint the narrative for history. Don't believe it, people. Don't believe what they tell you. There are just so many things that I've taken the stock word as to whatever it was all about. And then I find out years later, wow, was that wrong? Always draw your own conclusions. So, okay. There's no babbling. So I'll link to that conspiracy theory episode. Again, it was all about targeted individuals and the voice of God. Technology from DARPA. We'd actually read about that probably a month or two ago in some of our shape-shifting research. We had come across that, being able to beam voices directly into your head that nobody else can see or hear. And now where we have this neurological monitoring that they've talked about in the 21st Century Cures Act, one of the things that Ventura came upon were these microwave towers called Gwen's towers that were used during the Cold War for communication in the event of a nuclear emergency. I'm thinking that they're talking nuclear weapons discharge as opposed to a meltdown. But they were microwave radio towers, and they had put a map with all of the different people who claim to be targeted individuals, or TIs for short. And then they overlaid that map with where all of these Cold War relic era Gwen units were. And interestingly enough, it looked like in just about every case, the Gwen's unit was right in the middle of the population that is claiming to be targeted. And I'm sure if we dug into more, I mean, we already found that they can interrogate your brain with all kinds of things. That DARPA whistleblower, the guy who created the voice of God, was talking about them being able to suck dreams out of your head or replace memories or read your dreams. Being able to do way more than we even know about. I don't know, there was some stuff in the Jesse Ventura app that he asked him about and he wasn't allowed to answer. That's the way it always is. You know, I don't know how these people even talk without, like, ending up with duct tape over a bridge or something. Because you would think they wouldn't want them to talk about this stuff. But regardless, you know, even if people watch that and go, oh, this guy's nuts, he's making it all up. Just about every story that he gave in the lecture I saw yesterday, and all these technologies he had bullet pointed out on his PowerPoint to talk about, we had covered in the news with them talking about it in the lab with funding that they were trying to accomplish. So none of what he said was fantasy. So it doesn't matter if you trust him or not. It's out there. They're working on it. And they are 50 plus years ahead of the game. So, all right, let's take a look at a story that I found, and then maybe we'll get back to Bill Joy. A story that I found the other day talking about getting all this augmentation now. We discover that neuroscience, watching this documentary, it showed a whole chunk of the MKUltra program. Neuroscience, we always thought was to help us. And now we're finding that our last bastion of freedom, our brains, are going to be invaded. I even think that's what Jesse's show title was. Something like Brain Invaders. But it's true. They can get in. They can do it remotely. We were already reading about all that. We've been reading about national brain surveillance centers that doctors were clamoring for. Remember that? There was like a few months back. We were like, what? Why would they be talking about national brain surveillance centers? Well, then we find out potentially they already, at least from the stuff that I was watching yesterday, they already can do it long distance. They already can interrogate brains from central locations and collect data, which I never even imagined that we could have even been that far. But let's pretend even we didn't get that far, but maybe in our not too distant future. How disturbing is that? They're going to be sucking data from our brains, potentially real time at some point, when they have the capability of reading our thoughts, inserting thoughts, and when you're not happy, they're just going to send the little medevac mosquito mini drone with your dose for the day to calm you down, Johnny. Well, I ran across a story yesterday that talked about neuroscience actually being a tool of war from the very start. And I would believe this, since that is what makes you human. That's what makes you tick. And until they can crack the human brain and how it works and how to manipulate and control it all, you are a danger to the machine. Neuroscience can improve lives and enhance human capabilities, but does it have a role in national defense or the war efforts? Well, absolutely. Especially if you could be deemed as a domestic terrorist. What could once only be imagined in science fiction, and this seems to be a daily occurrence now that we're hearing our life that we're living to be sci-fi dystopia world, is now increasingly coming to fruition. Drones can be flown by human thoughts. Pharmaceuticals can help soldiers forget traumatic experiences, yes, and so can little zippity zaps to the brain, or produce feelings of trust to encourage confessions in interrogation. We're not even going to go there. DARPA-funded research is working on everything from implanting brain chips to neural dust in an effort to alleviate the effects. Yes, it's all about the trauma experienced in war. Invisible microwave beams, ding, ding, ding. Those are those Gwen's antennas, produced by military contractors and tested on U.S. prisoners, can produce sensations of burning at a distance. And actually, they were talking to some victims, too. And there's one thing, this woman, like, she really looked like a bit of a Looney Tune because she's dressing up in these special jackets with ice packs and metal in the bottom of her shoes to go to sleep to keep her feet from not burning. But she insisted they were lighting her up like a Christmas tree, and it was all because she used to call the White House every single day and leave messages. I mean, I don't know, maybe. It's insane. I mean, if they really are going to this level of insanity and it's all in evil fun testing up until now, guys, I mean, we see that the way this is all going, we see how invasive some of this is becoming. We see how this mantra is spinning out and how they really do want us to merge. And it's all going to be for your own good, Johnny. And hey, it's not going to hurt too much. But just like any good network administrator, you're going to need to monitor your network. And we are all going to be living nodes on that internet of everything that becomes the internet of, or the internet of things that becomes the internet of everything, us becoming a part of it. So with all these technologies, and technologies that they have in common, is that they are recent neuroscientific breakthroughs propelled by military research with the broader context of rapid neuroscientific development driven by mass government-funded projects in both America and the European Union. And even while much about the brain remains mysterious, this research has continued to the rapid and startling development of neuroscientific technology. And here's the thing, this whole brain initiative is a part of this, and it is a two-sided sword, because everything that they are discovering about the brain, they are applying toward bad science on the brain. They're also applying it from the other direction and using what they have learned about neurons to reconstruct a synthetic brain. and a computer that works like a human brain for artificial intelligence purposes. Kurzweil is working on some of that. And while we might marvel at some of these developments, it is also undeniably true that the state of affairs raises significant ethical questions. Like, what is the proper role of any of neuroscience in national defense or war efforts? Well, my research, and then as this author from December 1st, 2016, addresses these questions in the broader context of looking at how international relations and specifically warfare are shaped by scientific and medical expertise and technology. Ding, ding, ding. So if we declare ourselves a leader, does that make us the new 21st century superpower? That's a very good question. So weaponization of a peaceable science, what? Yes, that is what we are doing. To understand the relationship between science and war, and it goes way back. That whole Kaczynski, Unabomber, LSD, and the internet talked about how they had recruited a lot of scientists to be a part of some of these studies, these LSD studies and whatever, and the CIA was all working together with them. And they were about shaping a nation, shaping our children, shaping popular opinion, and being able to bend the wills of large groups of humans. The scientists have always been involved. To understand the relationship between science and war, Operation Paperclip, academic bioethicists, journalists, and policy advisors alike typically rely on a framework of dual use, and starting from the assumption that the purpose of science is to improve human life, the perspective nevertheless admits that many of these technologies used in peacetime or to help enhance human capabilities can also be harnessed for a second use, and that would be for harming and degrading human capabilities as a part of a military arsenal. And how many times have we talked about the double-edged sword? Guys, I was so on that positive end of technology. I believed that it was going to be used for good. I believe that the corporations whose technology was in their hands, like, talk about how naive, was going to use it to make the world unicorns and rainbows for all of us. They don't care about making money. No, they care about peace on Earth. Well, the joke was on you, Jewel, because it didn't quite turn out that way. Oh, no, no. Human greed and human power hungriness got the better of them. And here we are now on the cusp of this exponential technology that is just increasing in leaps and bounds every day. They have now cracked a lot of secrets of biology. They have IBM Watson now, who's training in all kinds of medical persuasions. And Dr. Watson will be able to figure out how to do it. That's what scares me. We're not even limited to human intelligence anymore. Dr. Watson, just Watson, is learning so fast. How long is it going to be before Watson doesn't discover, like, some deep, dark mystery that it would have taken humans 1,000 more years to discover? Maybe something that would really be like our kill switch, like push a button, like here's a note, boo, and everybody drops dead. I mean, it's very possible. Who knows? And like I've said so many times, just because we don't know something, or just because we haven't discovered something, and I don't mean just you or me, I mean as a species, like just because we haven't discovered the quote-unquote science behind it, doesn't always necessarily mean it doesn't exist or it isn't out there. You remember, bacteria wasn't known about for thousands of years. Maybe they did. But before the advent of the microscope, they didn't know that there was anything responsible for illness besides bad blood and maybe spirits, right? Until they really started to look at, you know, things they couldn't see with the naked eye. And then they're like, oh, look, there's a whole other world that evolved down there. And, It wasn't mojo or magic. It was just something that we couldn't see. Even in the spectrum of light, the most of the spectrum of light, human eyes cannot see. But that doesn't mean that there isn't other things going on in there, like, oh, I don't know, microwaves beaming down at people's heads. But apparently so. Anyway, so yes, harming and degrading humans becomes part of the military arsenal. This framework calls attention to the potential misappropriation of sciences and technologies. Ding, ding, ding. So the fact that DARPA is financing all of our universities and our hospitals to come up with all this newfangled weird-ass science. Just like the dude who helped develop the voice of God said, it was all compartmentalized. He built pieces. He didn't realize how they were all going to be used, and they put all the pieces together, and now they made this horrifying weapon that can invade every private corner of our brain. This framework calls attention to the potential misappropriation of sciences and technologies, and by acknowledging potential misuses, it helps to guide policy to limit the possibilities practical through such weapon conventions. That's like CRISPR as a WMD. We've talked about that one. Let's democratize it all, and then let's go, whoops. Oh, it was pretty dangerous to give that to everybody worldwide. Don't worry about it. Now that it's globalized, now anyone could do anything with it. And they can't pinpoint it on us. During those anthrax attacks back after 2001, they were able to determine that it was somebody within the government or had access to the anthrax within the government because it was a certain strain, and they were the only ones that had that. There was a signature involved. So if they democratize things, they give these technologies away to everybody, every lunatic who wants it, then, hey, whoever drops the vial, blink, won't be able to be traced. It's a frightening thought. Same goes for radio frequencies. They're looking now. DARPA, we covered this a while back, but I just saw it in my news feeds last night when I was searching that they now have a request for proposal out. They're looking at taking the radio spectrum. I'm not going to get too deep into this, but we've talked about this a little bit before. Radio spectrum, which is licensed through a federal agency like the FCC, and everyone gets a frequency and you can beam on it. No one legally is allowed to hijack your frequency that is yours, your dedicated frequency, to be able to broadcast. And you pay for it too. And you have to conform to their rules to be able to use it. And some of them are public and commercial, and some of them are military, and some of them are first responder. But they're complaining now that, oh my goodness, we're running out of bandwidth in the radio spectrum. I find that hard to believe, but some of them are low energy, some of them are high energy. AM, FM, RF, Wi-Fi, microwave, terahertz. I mean, it's all part of the same thing, remember? Just different frequencies. And again, just like if we couldn't see it, it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Same goes for the frequency spectrum of light, of which light is a part of. But if we can't hear it, it doesn't mean it doesn't exist either. And if we can hear it with the voice of God, it doesn't even necessarily mean it exists. But DARPA is now talking about taking control of all of the broadcast frequencies. And they want to do some sort of AI switching. So it's going to be an on-demand bandwidth. Four frequencies, radio frequencies, and all the different frequencies to beam things around. They want to be able to take that over and be able to allocate dynamically bandwidth to people who really need it. That means we lose people. That means we lose. That means they could turn everything into some sort of energy weapon, and we've already determined that the military has been pulling a large amount of resources into developing pulse weaponry over the last year or two. I've already seen those rail guns and laser guns and kinds of other crazy things that they're doing, using these heat rays, bzz, for crowd control or for knocking down and burning up drones in the sky. Where's this going to lead to? Of course they want to take over the airwaves, because the airwaves give you a potential to build a weapon against the machine. Especially if that's what they're going to be using against us. Dual-use framework and weaponization concept. Assume stark war peace, military-civilian divides, but in fact, the discipline of neuroscience grew equally and simultaneously out of institutions that we typically consider civilian and military. Modern neuroscience established in the post-World War II period, right after the Nazis, scientists came here, like many disciplines developed and funded in that era, such as the physics, the nuclear medicine, the space program, and others. And the discipline was established through military funding, ding-a-ling-a-ling, in both civilian institutions such as MIT and Harvard, ding-ding, both very connected to the Lizard Pit, and the military research institutes such as Walter Reed Army Institute of Research. That institute's Department of Neuropsychiatry originated the idea that researchers should study brain anatomy and physiology at the same time as psychology and psychiatry. And neuroscience was funded and shaped to meet the needs of warfare and national security imperatives. Ding, 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 ding. See, this makes so much sense now. The state of affairs was nothing new. Modern warfare and medical and scientific innovation have long been symbiotic, including the invention of American clinical neurology through the American Civil War. It is not possible to say, though, that neuroscience had been weaponized, because at that point it presumes a naturally peaceful and non-military origin. But that is simply historically inaccurate. The dual-use framework of being simultaneously used for good and evil, and the concept of weaponization assume a distinctive divide between help and harm. And people using these concepts are primarily concerned with harmful applications of neuroscience, those that would degrade human capacities. And without a doubt, these are of deep concern, and few would deny that we should pay close attention, for instance, to the use of neuropharmaceuticals. We've read about some of these, and there's all these new living pills and things. We discussed chemical lobotomies. Look back in history. We did a show on mental institutions. We talked a lot about them throughout the past, and how people who were deemed quote-unquote mentally ill were locked away in these torture horror chambers for many years without anyone ever batting an eye or looking to see what was going on or even caring. Big unmarked grave pits in the backyard. I mean, it's horrifying, horrifying. Electrotherapies, cracking open skulls, doing lobotomies with ice picks. And that was one of Rose Kennedy. Rose Kennedy, JFK's sister, was lobotomized with an ice pick because she was a little too rebellious. And now had the chemical lobotomies as well that all these newfangled 21st century pharmaceuticals can do. We got ourselves a problem. We have, we read 50 or 70% of the American population on antidepressants. You know, maybe everybody's so depressed because they're putting out some sort of frequency across the microwaves that puts you in a depressive mental state. I mean, I know it sounds nuts, but anybody who's looked into it, frequency is a very big, very big piece of this puzzle that I need to spend more time. Maybe I'll go on a sabbatical to do a month worth of research and then come back all fired up about frequencies. But your brain is an electrical machine. Your brain works on frequencies. Your signaling is on frequencies. They can be disrupted. And we are bathed in electromagnetic frequency radiation, EMF, all over our environment. You know, we have all this ubiquitous internet, everything now, and smart meters and all this other crap going on, cell phones, microwave ovens. You don't think that that's not affecting us somehow? Because I would say it was. And then add to that, all this mad science, we find out about these Gwen's towers, that they're beaming crap into people's heads. Seriously, you should watch that conspiracy theory episode. It was pretty interesting. And I'll even link that the dude who created the Voice of God lecture in the notes as well. And you draw your own conclusions. But I'm just saying, this technology is not a surprise, because we've read about a lot of this stuff right out of the laboratory. But I think what surprises me the most is that it's been going on for such a long time without anybody knowing about it, at least without the general public having even half a clue. But the stark divide between help and harm elides the fact that many technologies can do both simultaneously. One example is the current DARPA-funded development of brain-machine interfaces, and we've talked about these ad nauseum. These technologies seek to connect the brain directly to machine technologies in order to control them remotely. And of course, this may be a boon for veterans and soldiers in need of better prosthetic devices, but these very same technologies, sometimes the very same experimental subjects, these are the ones that are being used to pilot drones, maybe even with their mind, for potential use in warfare. And a second example, consider military, medical, and rehabilitative practices. These are assumed to be on the help side rather than the harm. But think, for instance, of the increasing diagnosis of mild PTSD and other traumatic brain injuries in the military setting. And yes, and quote-unquote mild means that it doesn't give you any dysfunction, but it means that you will be ripe to be a guinea pig in the future. Treatments of these injuries may do great good in clinical setting, but these therapies are also a part of a system of military medicine aimed at producing war readiness and potential redeployment of soldiers. Good health of soldiers is integral to warfare, suggesting that the help-harm divide is not so stark as the dual-use framework assumes. And for all these reasons, it is not possible to say that neuroscience has been fully militarized or weaponized. And I'm going to say, little naive person writing this story, assistant professor of international relations at Rutgers University in Newark, you haven't looked deep enough there then, Allison, because it's been pretty proven to me. And everywhere I look, I see DARPA funding, DARPA funding, DARPA funding. And all these technologies, sure, they're all done in the name of a cure. That's how we get funding in the first place. But every single one of these are being integrated into an arsenal to be able to turn either on our enemies or on your own population, if need be, in the future. So we've been looking at all kinds of different implants and smart devices and pulling us into the matrix of the Internet of Things of the future, all in the name of curing you with this 21st century medicine. Well, I came across a couple interesting stories over the last few days. You know, it's one thing to be beaming microwaves into your brain and being able to suck your thoughts out of your head, but it's another to find out that it's very possible that some of these new connected devices, I think Alexa was the first one that we had read about, where Alexa was put as evidence in a trial for a murder because it recorded the actual murder or the circumstances that were going on in the room when it happened. And his smart device, Blumen, well, secrets from smart devices find a path to the U.S. legal system. Fizz.org. Make sure you stick your cell phone under your chair cushion and pass gas in it as often as possible to mask the sound. An Ohio man claimed that he was forced into a hasty window escape when his house caught fire last year. But look out, his pacemaker data. Now, who even thought that pacemakers were collecting data? Apparently they are, but even worse, the police obtained his pacemaker data. So his pacemaker data obtained by police happened to show otherwise. And he was instead charged with arson and insurance fraud. He was given up by his pacemaker. And in Pennsylvania, authorities dismissed rape charges after data from a woman's Fitbit. So the Fitbit's spying on you too. Contradicted her version of her whereabouts during a 2015 alleged assault. Vast amounts of data collected from our connected devices, from our Fitbits to our smart refrigerators, thermostats, automobiles, among others, are increasingly being used in U.S. legal proceedings to prove or disprove claims by people involved. In a recent case study that made headlines, authorities in Arkansas, oh, this is the one we were talking about. It was Amazon's Echo. Authorities in Arkansas sought and eventually obtained data from a murder suspect's Amazon Echo speaker to obtain evidence. The U.S. Federal Trade Commission in February of 2017 fine television maker Vizio. That's frightening because I have an old Vizio TV. For secretly gathering data on viewers collected from its smart TVs and then selling that information to marketeers. And the maker of the smartphone connected sex toy WeVibe, meanwhile, agreed in March to a court settlement of a class action lawsuit from buyers who claimed that highly intimate and sensitive data was being uploaded to the cloud without permission and shown last year to be vulnerable to hackers. Well, don't worry about it because privacy is dead, they say. Well, trying to come to grips with data collected, stored and analyzed by all these devices can be daunting. See, we're just talking about like little Fitbits and stuff, but I mean, it's gone so way beyond there. Our main storage device, i.e. our brain, has been invaded. They have found our chinks in the armor, and maybe they haven't zippity-zapped you yet, but as more of these new toys are rolling out with the 21st Century Cures Act, unlimited orgy funding, to be able to just do mad science on anything that could be proven to be a useful tool for them in the future. It seems it's anything goes. Trying to come to grips with data collected, stored, and analyzed by all these devices can be daunting. When one looks at the expectation of privacy today, it is radically different than it was a generation ago, says Aaron Larkin, Lakin, a digital forensic specialist with the consultancy group Duff & Phelps, and author of a 2013 book on computer forensics. He says privacy is dead. Lakin has consulted or testified in cases of insurance fraud, divorce, and other legal proceedings where digital evidence can be relevant. He said that the always-on nature of the Internet of Things devices means that huge amounts of personal information is circulating among companies in the internet cloud and elsewhere, with very few standards on how this data is protected or used. And the net result of these technologies is that we are foregoing our personal privacy and our personal autonomy and even sovereignty as humans, ding ding, and relinquishing that to a combination of state harvesters of big data and omnipresent institutions and systems. Now, guys, this is out of phys.org, no less. A report last year from Harvard's Berkman Klein Center for Internet Studies pointed out that the range of new connected devices can yield evidence for law enforcement, ranging from your televisions to your toasters to your bed sheets. That must be some of those Under Armour. I was just seeing some new 3D printed AI Under Armour sneakers. Give me a break. To bed sheets or light bulbs, we talked about the Li-Fi, to cameras, your smart toothbrushes, door locks, cars, watches, and other wearables, which, quote, are being packed with sensors and wireless connectivity. I warned you guys, but it's way worse than we ever imagined. The audio and video sensors on Internet of Things devices opens up numerous avenues for government actors to demand access to real-time and recorded communications. John Sampson, a Marshall University professor of digital forensics and a former police officer, says this new abundance of evidence can be really good for law enforcement if investigators can find relevant data. Well, all they got to do is just turn Watson on and he'll find it. Don't worry. You even have to be aware that it's there. But once you're aware that it's there, ho-ho, look out. Most police officers would not even think to look for a Fitbit or for a smart thermostat. Another problem is the sheer volume of data and computing resources needed to obtain specific data, often requiring weeks of computer time. And while Sammons presented research on the use of connected cars this year at the Academy of Forensic Sciences, saying that these new vehicles with improved connectivity offer a significant new source of potential evidence for both criminal and civil litigation. Yeah, beep, 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 beep. Oh, there goes Jewel. Wonder where she's going. Hey, you can't get away. Privacy activists, meanwhile, worry that these devices can unleash new kinds of surveillance without even knowledge of the users, and that the legal system must define the limits of constitutional protections against unreasonable searches. Jay Stanley of the American Civil Liberties Union says that gathering data from connected speakers such as Amazon Echo should face the same standards as wiretaps, which need a warrant from a judge based on a possible cause of a crime, rather than more streamlined law enforcement subpoenas. In your house, you should have absolute privacy, says Stanley. But one gray area in the law is that conversations recorded on home speakers may then be sent to the cloud. Your cell phone does the same shit. And in that case, the holding of data by a quote-unquote third party may wipe away the constitutional privacy protection. So like we were talking about yesterday, how our whole world is going back to old school, like dumb terminals and everything in the cloud. There's a purpose for that. We see that now. All your data's up in the cloud. You are not covered by any privacy protection by the Constitution anymore. We think there needs to be jurisprudential and legislative means of addressing these issues, says Stanley, because the privacy invasions are so significant. Jules Polotensky, another nice Polish name with the first name of Jules, chief executive of the not-for-profit Future of Privacy Forum, says that while legal issues are still being debated, you should always know if you have a device that is sending data elsewhere, and probably a good majority of them are, even if you don't know it. Polotensky says it is important to set a legal and constitutional privacy framework to reassure customers. It is critical to get the balance between data utility and law enforcement access right, or people will not trust these devices. And Jules, I hate to tell you, I think you might be a little bit wrong there, because you forgot about the dopamine dangling carrot. Many of these people with a 7-second attention span do not care, because they have groomed them to not have any expectation of privacy. Here, Johnny, send me pictures of what you had for dinner. Send me pictures of what you just blew out of your nose. Send me pictures of what you and your friends are doing every second of the day. that's just what happens. They have groomed these younger generations to not really care who knows or who doesn't. They don't realize that how their potential future will be a dossier of all these weird, crazy things that they did. And they might not turn out too well for them, and gives them a pretty complete psychological profile. Out of the Free Thought Project from March 17, 2017, for the very first time, police are asking for an entire city's Google searches. And guess what? The court says yes. An Orwellian precedent, well, that too, an Orwellian precedent is underway just outside of Minneapolis, Minnesota. So any of our listeners up there in Minnesota, I know we have a few, which could be the downfall of internet freedom as we know it. Police in Edina, Minnesota, E-D-I-N-A, maybe it's Edina, Minnesota, have been granted a warrant requiring Google to determine everyone in an entire city who used its search engine to look up a specific term and then identify them to authorities. The case doesn't involve some sort of massive terror plot to destroy an entire city or a high-level child trafficking ring. Oh, no. It is for wire fraud crime. Less than $30,000. However, if Google caves into the warrant, it could set a precedent that would undoubtedly be used by police across the country. According to Ars Technica, investigators are focusing their probe on an online photo of someone with the same name as a local financial fraud victim, and the image turned up on a fake passport, and it was used to trick a credit union, as well as transfer $28,500 out of a man's bank account. So this bogus passport was faxed to a credit union, used a spoof phone number, and now they want to know everyone who searched this name and looked for that picture. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. Wildscat Radio, it's Thursday.